This is Mental Selling. This is the sales podcast for people that are dedicated to making a difference in customers' lives and have a purpose beyond just a paycheck. I'm your host, Will Milano. Let's get right into the show. At the heart of sales effectiveness is the ability to communicate well. But it goes beyond words on a page or messaging we can recite. It's about things like the ability to truly understand others, create emotional connections, ask great questions, and check for understanding before moving forward. Thanks for joining us today on Mental Selling, your favorite sales podcast. And today, I'm happy to be joined by Johnny Walker. Johnny is a colleague of mine. He's the founder and president of Character Inc., as well as an executive coach, speaker, and longtime training facilitator with Integrity Solutions. As he says, he helps people do what they do best more often, more consistently, and more effectively. I've been eager to have him on this show for a while. Johnny, thank you so much for being with us today.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So I want to start by, obviously, we're going to be talking about communication today in a lot of different forms. And salespeople might think about communication and immediately jump to thinking of it as a quote-unquote soft skill. But responding to customers and colleagues more clearly and effectively does things like solve problems faster for customers. It improves customer experience. It elevates your brand perception with customers. So there's really nothing soft about that, right?
No, I agree. I think it's a necessary skill. In fact, your branding has everything to do with your ability to communicate. We often talk about everyone who has a personal brand. That seems to be a new thing we hear in the last 5 or 10 years. And the way you communicate is a direct alignment with how people view your brand and your professionalism. In my studies for my PhD in leadership, I ran across a quote from Psychology Today back in 2017. And I actually didn't agree with this in the beginning. And the quote was that through their studies, they're finding that everyone's number one underlying emotional need is that need to be understood. And in the beginning, I kind of pushed back on that internally. And what I found was the more I researched and the more I looked at the groups that we work with through Integrity Solutions and Character Inc. globally, it's absolutely true. What happens is when we stop feeling understood, every other connection that we have emotionally starts to wane and disconnect. Looking at my relationship with my wife and my feelings of love toward her or by her, if she stops trying to understand me, right, then immediately I stop feeling love or I feel less love. I think the same is true in any relationship, whether it's in business or friendship, customer relationships, internally, externally. At the moment people don't understand us, we start disconnecting from them. So it becomes an extremely important part of our business acumen, the ability to be understood, but most importantly, the ability for our customers and our colleagues to feel understood by us.
And that's a good bridge to the next area I wanted to talk about, which is the importance of establishing and fostering emotional connections. And that's with customers, it's with peers and colleagues, it's with our leaders. Can you talk about why you think that's important and how that plays out?
Well, it's important because emotions are a part of our everyday life. In fact, studies show that, I think it was Harvard Business Review, most of our decisions in the 90 percentile originate in the subconscious in our emotional side of things. And so if we're not connecting with people on an emotional level, we're missing out. If we're in sales and we're connecting with someone on a logical level, but we're not getting down into how does this benefit you? What's the risk if you don't use this? How important is this? If we don't dig into those deep emotional motivators, we lose the connectivity and we only have a logical conversation. And so the emotional part of us is what connects us to everybody. It's not just what we think, it's how we feel. And even though emotions by themselves are terrible filters for decision-making, no one trusts anyone else's emotions solely for decision-making. However, we want to feel that emotional connection. And if that's missing, we're missing probably about 80% of that connectivity.
What are some of the reasons why let's talk about salespeople. What are some of the fears maybe behind and reasons why they don't communicate or focus on communicating well?
I think what's missing is the listening piece. I think a lot of salespeople believe that convincing people is what selling's all about, and that's not true. It's really about understanding their needs, wants, challenges, and desires, and solving those. We want to move away from convincing people against their will to solving a problem or achieving a goal with the customer using our products and services. Because everyone wants their problem solved. Everyone wants a goal achieved. But we're not going to get there if we just show up and throw up, is what they call it in the industry. We get there by fully understanding them, fully understanding our products and services, and being able to make those connections to where we're actually solving problems with them. And that's where we begin to not just be a trusted advisor, but even move into that more valued position with the customer.
You're walking alongside the customer. You're not in the combative mode. In every way that you communicate with them has to reflect that.
Agree. And again, the mental image is not across the table from them. Whether we're looking about selling or whether we're talking about coaching people and leadership, we want to move away from, in selling, the used car salesman type mentality, which is what everyone thinks of when they think of selling, or even the manager style of leadership, where you're across the table telling them what to do. All of that is much more effective when you understand where they are, what their needs are, what their desires are, and then you're able to communicate effectively what you believe would be a good path for them to go, or maybe even asking questions on a coaching situation where they think they should go. You can direct the conversation, but you're no longer manipulating it using the open-ended questions, who, what, when, where, how, and sometimes why. Too many why questions can put people on the defensive. But when we're asking those open-ended questions, people feel heard, they feel understood using that reflective listening. So what I hear you saying is, and you got to be careful, it's not what you're saying is, you're not telling them what they're saying, you're letting them know what your filters are hearing and allowing them to correct you, that willingness to be wrong when you're communicating and not defend your first initial understanding of what they said, but that desire, that genuineness to truly understand what they need, I think is a game changer. And this is especially true internally for organizations when it comes to meetings. We're doing a really great job in corporate America or corporate globally, where we're going out there and understanding the customer's needs and matching what we have to their needs. But we still internally have this, I guess, subconscious track that we go into a meeting with, this is what I need out of this meeting. And we don't ask the open-ended questions. You get leaders of different departments, and they're all going in there trying to get what they need instead of trying to understand what other people need from them. And because we're not asking great questions to fully understand it, we're demanding to be fully understood first. We have that in reverse. And it's really hurting the cultures of organizations.
And we're going to talk about meetings specifically a little bit later in the discussion. I want to talk about the role of different communication styles. So there's verbal, written, things like even just body language, conscious and subconscious. I've heard you talk about how the role of communication is about helping to sell ideas. Can you talk about that in some of the context of different communication styles?
When people are communicating, we are selling an idea. When we do a communication course, and ask people, how many of y'all have ever gone on a date when they raise their hands, or how many of you are married? Congratulations, you sold someone on the idea that they should hang out with you for an evening, you know, or to marry you for a lifetime. So we're all selling something. Even in parenting, we're selling the idea that they need to be doing what we want them to do. And I think it's important when you think about body language and you think about tone of voice, those need to match. When we look at the cues of people's body language, their facial expressions, when they're saying one thing, but their body language is saying something else, we catch that. Whether we realize it or not, subconsciously, we start thinking there's something wrong with what this person is saying. We may even say to ourselves, they don't believe what they're saying. So we really need to be thinking about how we communicate well. Are we asking the right questions? Are we answering the questions in a way they like to receive it? I mean, it kind of goes back to behavior styles or DISC, or communication profiles. Are we using the types of communication that they want? Is it too much data? Is it too little data? Is it too emotional in the words that we're choosing in an email or a text? Or is it not emotional enough? Is it too personal? Does it need to be more professional? All those things need to be considered.
Yeah, it's so important to pick up on those subtleties that we all have, those inherent I don't want to say biases, maybe that's not the right word, but just tendencies of the way we prefer to digest information and send information out, that sort of thing, yeah.
Well, I think bias is a fair statement. We don't like to admit that we have them, but we all do. In the way we communicate, I call it the power of normal. If I cut someone off in traffic, there's a reason. If someone else cuts me off in traffic, they're a jerk. And we all have our own biases and we all have our own filters that we use. But the power of normal, though, when we're talking about, let's say, a communication profile or behavior styles, if I'm a talker and I'm not looking to identify what their behavior style is and adapt to them, I'm always going to go through the power of normal. It's just what we do. If I'm not being empathetic and trying to see things from their perspective and trying to understand what they're meaning to say, instead of trying to twist it into what I want them to say, we're not listening for the meaning. We miss most of what they're trying to say.
And that either willingness or lack thereof to adapt to their style sends a message about whether you're sort of in it with them or you're just trying to forge ahead to, like you said, get what you want, which is a negative perception of selling.
Again, I think everyone wants to be understood. That's the most important thing we can do for someone. It's a great gift that we can give people, is understanding what they're meaning to say. And something I tell people a lot in my coaching and in the trainings that we do is, and this is very important, understanding does not equal agreement. And we misunderstand that. You can have political conversations with people that are on the total opposite side of the aisle, religious conversations with someone who's of a different faith than you, and you can still get along as long as you're not requiring agreement. And when we start believing the lie that understanding means agreement, and there are some people out there that are pushing that lie, you have to agree with me in order to understand me. And that's just not true. I can fully understand someone's perspective and never agree with them. And that's true for everyone. And I think that's what we're missing in today's culture, especially in America, and even in our business cultures. And a lot of that comes from, you know, your parents who, do you understand what I'm saying? And what they're meaning to say is, do you agree with me or are you going to do it? So almost subconsciously, we're trained to believe the lie that understanding and agreement are the same thing when they're not.
A lot of what you're saying around understanding doesn't equal agreement, it really comes back to listening. It's such a critical part and such a large portion of effective communication that people don't think of. They think of communication as the outward, the telling, the talking, but communication is really much more about the listening.
I think probably 80% of communication is that ability to listen and the ability to comprehend. And it really comes from a sincere, easy for me to say, sincere desire to understand someone. And it really is easy to see in somebody if they're really wanting to understand me or are they just wanting me to understand them. And we lose deals, we lose friendships, we lose relationships all the time because we're not interested in them. And people will often go out of their way to do business with you or go out of their way when you need something from them internally. If you are someone who is always trying to understand them and being sincere in engaging them that way. Going back to what you were saying, 80% of communication is that ability to listen, and reflective listening is such a big piece of that. But you have to be willing to be wrong. And that's another piece that is most often missed. Some people use reflective listening and the other person says, no, that's not what I was saying. And the person that reflected back will say, no. And they start arguing, you said this, you said that. It doesn't matter what you've heard them say. It only matters what they are trying to say. And we have to have that mindset. We have to have a heart to truly understand people. And again, it goes back to we're so often listening for agreement instead of listening for understanding.
And like you said, the idea of listening has to come from a genuine desire to hear the person. And we've talked a lot on this podcast about salespeople wanting to be viewed as authentic. And authenticity comes from that genuine desire to help people to solve their problems. And that has to, if you back up from that, has to start with a genuine desire to understand where they're coming from, understand what they're saying. And like you said, the understanding does not equal agreement, that aspect of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, that willingness to be wrong, that true curiosity. And that's something too that we teach people to do, is to attach to that natural curiosity of, you like a child. Even a baby is putting things in their mouth and They're trying to figure out what something is. What does it taste like? What does it look like? What does it feel like? All those things. And somewhere along the way in adulthood, we stop. I don't want to say we lose the curiosity because it's there, but we stop accessing it as often as we should. And if we really want to understand people, we really need to attach that curiosity that's, I think, natural within us for us to be able to say, what are they trying to say? What do they really mean to say? Now, what is their perspective, whether I agree with it or not? That curiosity will uncover a lot of information that if you don't harness that curiosity, you'll automatically stop at your own filters when you hear what you want to hear.
And that curiosity is tied to your degree of patience, isn't it? Because you have to have enough patience to be willing to let that scenario play out and not be so impatient as to want to just forge ahead regardless of what they're saying.
You know, one of the things a lot of our participants in our trainings talk about is I'm learning to slow down to speed up. And I think that's a military term, comes from the military, but really slowing down to fully grasp what's going on around us. If we move too fast, we make a lot of mistakes. And making the time, not finding it, because you have to make it. We only have 24 hours in a day. You only have 1 hour in this meeting. Is it more important for me to say what I want to say? Or is it more important for that person to be understood and for me to be able to understand them so that in the few minutes I have to speak, I am speaking their language. I am solving the exact problem they're looking for, or I'm offering the right assistance at the right time for the right solution.
Yeah. Something you and I talked about in a conversation ahead of recording this was you talked about the myth that salespeople need to carry the conversation because they initiate it. And when you said earlier the don't show up and throw up thing, it reminded me of that aspect of what we had talked about previously. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, a lot of people believe that salespeople have to go in and they have to know everything. And their job is to explain everything, you know, fully. And there's a little bit of truth in it. Every lie is buried in a lot of truth. And so, yes, we do need to have product knowledge. Yes, we do need to have knowledge about our industry. But communication isn't about carrying the conversation. It's about asking the right questions. And a perfect example is my wife, when she went through integrity selling. She turned it into integrity communication before we actually had that program. She homeschooled our children. And so our youngest two were in a homeschool group and the kids would be in a class and she'd be in the hallway or in one of the coffee rooms sitting there. And there's these ladies sitting there and she wouldn't engage them because she didn't feel comfortable carrying the conversation. But once she went through integrity selling and she learned the art of asking questions, and during the follow-up sessions around week three or four, she was so excited to report back to the group that she was initiating engagements and she didn't have to carry the conversation at all. All she had to do is be genuinely interested in them and ask great open-ended questions if people will talk. And once she realized that, it changed how she engaged everybody. And to the point, women now call her and set up coffee, they set up lunch, they set up time where they all loved my wife before, but they think she's a great conversationalist now, but really all she's doing is asking great questions and genuinely being interested in the answer. And then she'll ask the follow-up questions. It's not just one question, then another, but to dig deeper into that. And so we don't have to carry the conversation. In fact, if we're truly communicating well, we'll find that we're not talking most of the time. We're talking half the time or less.
And there are very few parts of the sales process where a salesperson should be doing the majority of the talking, right? For the most part, they should be doing much less.
Absolutely. Product demonstrations or service demonstrations are normally a 90-10 with the salesperson talking 90% of the time. And the only feedback question they ask is at the end, got any questions? Terrible placement of that question. And it's really a lazy question. What we should be doing is sharing, this is what I heard you say. Here's how we solve the problem, talking about the benefits, and then asking what we call a feedback question. How do you see this solving that problem? Engaging that feedback, even in the demonstration, turning that into a 50-50 dialogue instead of a 90-10. And people will try to force you into that 90-10. They're not used to that 50-50, but once you start asking the questions, it's amazing.
It's a much more collaborative process.
Absolutely. And even if you forget, there was a time I was demonstrating to a client. I had my slides up there. I had my feedback questions written down. And I got to slide 3 and I realized I hadn't asked a feedback question. And I stopped and I said, you know, I didn't get your feedback on those first 2 points. Do you mind if I back up and ask you a couple of questions? Of course, they said, yes, it's fine. So I backed up and I didn't go over the whole point again, but I just highlighted, abbreviated what we had talked about. And then I asked the feedback question. And I was demonstrating to 2 people, 2 decision makers. And what was interesting is in this situation, they talked for 5 minutes and I was no longer in the conversation. They were talking to each other how this solution that I was presenting to them, it could solve A, B, and C and 1, 2, and 3. And they were just getting more and more excited. They did turn to me at one point and said, they asked, can we do this globally? And I smiled and I said, we can. And all of a sudden I was no longer in the conversation. They went back to chit-chatting. When they were done, they laughed and apologized. I'm sorry, we just got excited. No, I said, no. Of course, the whole time I was making notes. And of course, they became a customer at the end of that conversation, because by asking that one simple question, it was open-ended and it was basically around application. What would this mean to them, or how would they see this impacting their team? Suddenly, they started convincing each other that they needed to do this.
Well, and like you said, the sales process and a meeting that's part of the sales process, whatever it might be, is not about the salesperson carrying the conversation. It's about advancing the problem solving.
Right. Right. Or the goal achievement, either one, giving them what they want and taking an appropriate next step to get there. But that almost never happens in the convincing mode when you're going in there, oh, I'm going to tell them all these great things. Because people don't believe your words as much as they believe their own. And that really is the art of communication, is that ability to develop a great open-ended question or a series of them that you're prepared to use. And it's a guide. It's not a script. And the great follow-up questions, that just using that natural curiosity or using a follow-up statement, can you tell me more about this? And people will just go deeper, because everyone's favorite topic is themselves or the things that they're interested in. Even a supporter who doesn't like to talk about themselves, if you ask about their kids, they'll talk for 10 minutes. If you ask about their team at work, they'll talk for 10 minutes. So asking the right question the right way, it's gold. It's absolute gold.
I want to go back to something you alluded to a little earlier, which is the importance of expressing genuine interest in what somebody is interested in and the power of that statement. So what I hear you saying is, how would you advise salespeople sort of hone in on getting better at doing that so that they're not focused on themselves and having that mental sort of, I want, I need discussion constantly between their ears?
It really is about practice. Professionals practice their craft every single day. It's about role-playing, even in the core, and pretending what an answer would be and asking the follow-up questions or assuming what an answer might be. How would I phrase that? What I call the phrase that pays. So what I hear you saying is you have to practice it. And I would say this also, use it in every area of your life. If you're only using this at work, it's not genuine. It's not who you are. So we need to mature as humans, as people. We need to constantly be getting better. Just be a better person than you were yesterday. And one way of doing that, and a really big way of doing that, is by practicing that reflective listening. I've done coaching and counseling for about 35 years. I started with teenagers. And I would teach 13-year-olds this phrase. And I would tell them, use this phrase. So what I hear you saying is, and they would look at me like I had 3 heads. And I said, I know it's a weird phrase. I know, especially for a 13-year-old. But go to class tomorrow and all week long, don't interject your own ideas. Just ask them open-ended questions and paraphrase the important parts to them with that phrase. And they would all come back. And they would say, this is amazing. People are coming up to me now in the beginning of homeroom to talk to me. And I said, of course. It's because you know the secret to popularity, and that's be interested in their favorite topic, them. I said, here's the problem. They're not interested in you. They're still interested in them, but you're halfway there. It's really gold in that ability to rephrase what people are saying, and we need to make it a habit. And it's only going to become a habit when we start using it in our personal lives as well as our professional lives.
And it's just such a great, subtle, simple, but effective way to express that genuine curiosity and genuine desire to understand somebody else and to help them.
Yeah, and it's really about repeating that important piece back. not the important piece to you, but what you're sensing, using your emotional intelligence, using your social skills, and repeating back to them what's important to them.
So part of what we talked about earlier is keeping questions open-ended. And in doing that, that's one of the ultimate ways to quell the idea of salespeople being manipulative, right? You said something about never assume, always confirm with a great question. Can we talk about that a little?
Absolutely. The worst thing that we do is assume, and this is especially true for veteran salespeople. So you have veteran salespeople that actually believe they know the customer. Well, in this, you know, market, in this environment, especially since COVID, but it was really true before COVID as well, things change on a dime. Things change every week. And when we assume that we've worked with this customer for 20 years, we know exactly what's going on. We understand that. Well, you probably do understand a lot. But what you don't understand is what happens in between the last meeting and this meeting. And we need to ask those questions. And anytime in our heads that we assume that we know something, we need to make that a red flag to go, need to pause, and I need to ask an open-ended question here. And it doesn't need to be closed-ended, those questions that can be answered with yes or no, because those are somewhat manipulative. We use too many of them. But open-ended enables them to answer any way they want to. And I always tell people, never, ever assume, always confirm your assumptions with a great question. We are natural assumers. There's a great saying out there, in the absence of truth, any lie will do. And for a salesperson, I'll give you a great example, Will. So a salesperson is getting close to the commitment, to that close, and they're going to go back and double check one last thing, and they're going to call tomorrow. You don't hear from them for a week. In the absence of the truth of what's really happening, any lie will do. And that salesperson starts thinking all negative thoughts. Oh, they don't want this. Someone said no. It turns out maybe someone was sick or in the hospital. All sorts of things happen. And when I ask sales professionals, when you assume the negative like that, what percentage of the time is it really something negative? And the consistent answer I get is somewhere between 10 to 20%. About 80% of the time, it was something that made complete sense. But it just goes to prove that in the absence of truth, any lie will do. We naturally fill in the gaps. And that's just the way our brains work. So we need to understand that we do this in a negative way, even with our customers, when we're not assuming the negative on why they didn't call back, but even assuming that we know their needs. And the longer we know someone or the longer we've been in an industry, the more arrogant we become. And it's subconscious. I mean, if we thought these thoughts out loud or said them out loud, we would go, that's terrible. Sounds terrible. But we assume we know. And by realizing that all it takes is a couple of seconds, maybe a minute or two, to ask a great question and to let them answer that question, and our assumptions are proven either correct or incorrect. The worst thing that can happen is our assumption was right. And we didn't waste a minute. We took advantage of that minute. But so often, and every sales professional admits to this that I know, and we've worked with thousands of them, that they will say, a lot of times I was assuming something and I started using this, I never assume, always confirm with a great question. All of a sudden, the answer was something totally different than what I was assuming. And our assumptions are right about 80% of the time. And we think, that's great. It's not. It's terrible. It's 20% of the time you're wrong. And now you're pushing something that they don't want. And all it takes to be 100% accurate is asking a great question.
And we've also talked about how selling is about helping someone get from their current situation to their desired situation. I know that you've said that questions that address the benefits of the cost or price of inaction, it relates to that idea of questions as a tool to help create someone's belief in a desired situation.
Yeah, it really solidifies it. So for years in coaching, I always would look at, even in my 20s coaching young people, I would say, what's the benefit of you doing all this hard work? What's going to be the benefit to you? And they would talk about these long-term benefits. For a teenager, that's a long way. For us, we can say the benefit in 3 years would be, but for a teenager, that's a long time. It'd be almost a quarter of their life, almost, you know, or a fifth. But when you start asking about the cost of inaction, what if you do nothing? How does that impact tomorrow? How does that impact this relationship or your friendships? For me, I always talked about the return on investment of doing that, but most people are not motivated by pleasure. We tend to believe that we can dangle the carrot and they're motivated by that. Most people are more motivated by pain or fear, and that's a type of pain. And one of the examples I give in class sometimes, I'll use a silly example. If I want you, you're about to sit in that chair, and I want you to immediately, as soon as you sit down, get out of that chair. That's my goal. And I have your favorite cookie, and you really like cookies. And as soon as you sit down and say, you want a cookie? You may or may not get out of that chair. The fact that's your favorite cookie may not get you out. But before you sit down, if I have a tech in that chair, the second you sit down, you're jumping back up. In fact, you'll jump up quicker than you ever would for anything that you desire to avoid that pain. Now, that's a very simplistic example, but it's still true. We often ignore the cost of inaction. We don't want to admit that if we do nothing, bad things will happen. We avoid pain. We ignore negative feelings. We suppress them. And so by being able to ask those questions around, well, what if you don't get to this desired situation? What's that going to cost you? And it's literally stopped people on their tracks. I was walking with someone one time, and I asked the question, what's the cost been to your company not putting something like this in place? And I kept walking, and it was about a step in front of him as we were talking. And all of a sudden, I realized I don't even hear his footsteps. And I turned around. He was 5 steps back. It literally stopped him in his tracks. I walked back to him and I said, what's wrong? And he said, man, that was a powerful question. No one had ever asked you. And so those emotional motivators, you know, the benefits, the return on investment, the cost of inaction, and of course, how important is this? Where does this fit in your priorities? And if we don't ask those questions, we'll often find a great solution to a great problem, whether it's with a product or service, or whether it's coaching or people. We think, oh, they're really bought into this. But if there's 8 other priorities in their life that are more important, maybe this is an 8, and you think, oh, that's great. What if they have 4 10s? Or in most companies, everything's a 10, right? So maybe this is a 10.1, but they have some 10.8s. I mean, however you want to look at it. We have to understand, what are they going to do differently? What are they willing to stop doing? What are they willing to start doing? What price are they willing to pay? Because whether they buy a product or a service or an idea, there's always trade-offs. And we have to understand those.
Yeah. Addressing that cost of inaction, because that is such a large part of what a salesperson's competition is today, right? It's most deals are not lost to competitors. They're lost to inertia or buyers sticking with the status quo and just not moving ahead.
Yeah, the cost of the status quo is huge. And no one's asking that question. We have a natural tendency to suppress that, even in ourselves. We don't like to think about that. But the wisest people constantly ask themselves when they're assessing a situation, what if I do nothing? I was working with an organization with a communication program, and they told me a story about how they used the gap model in the integrity communication program in a meeting. I think it was about a $20,000 or $25,000 project. And they were talking about, okay, well, what are the benefits of this? And they said, people were talking about it around the room. And then they got to, what's the risk if we don't? And they were silent. There was no risk of not doing this. In fact, suddenly at that moment, the benefits were no longer that important. And they nixed the project because for the money they were spending, the benefits weren't worth it. And they were so grateful. They even said, we never would have figured that out, that this was not worth it until we spent all the money and we got none of the return on investment that we were really looking for. We were so focused on doing it, we never thought about, well, what's going to happen if we don't? And they were so grateful to be able to do that in one meeting. I mean, save them $20,000 in one meeting.
It's such an underrated part of the sales process or the customer buying journey is risk mitigation. Whether it's overtly stated or not, it's in the back of their heads. And it's something everybody is evaluating.
Well, that's the other piece is that we're not manipulating them emotionally. We're just asking open-ended questions for them to draw up from their subconscious. And we're asking them to verbalize it because if we go in there and tell them what the risks of not doing it is, or here's the benefits if you do this, there's a small percentage of belief or buy-in that comes from me saying it. But if I ask the great question and they say it, suddenly there's epiphanies that happen and there's deep buy-in. Because as they're answering that question, they're processing it internally, they're speaking it, they're hearing themselves say it. There's so much going on in the brain at that point. And it just solidifies, you know, whether or not they really want to be in this desired situation or not. And it's no longer about convincing them against their will. It's about solving a problem or achieving a goal with them. And everyone wants to buy stuff, but no one wants to be sold. Everyone wants a problem solved. No one wants to be convinced against their will.
And communication's role is really about resolving problems. And there are ways to help to use communication tools to help people get unstuck.
And we can't do that until we fully understand them. And they're not ready to hear any solution until they believe we fully understand them. And so that has to be the first thing that we do, even if it takes two or three meetings to fully understand what a customer wants internally or externally. That's time well spent. Time wasted is when I'm spending two or three meetings trying to convince someone against their will. Because even once I do that, they really still have their own opinions. They may say yes, but inside they're still hesitant.
And it's something a salesperson should be doing more of when they're communicating, is helping to raise objections to the surface so that you're understanding those objections before trying to prove your point.
And again, if there's an objection in the way, until we fully understand it, we really can't address it well. And even if we do address it well, they don't believe that we did. I'll give you an example. I ask people all the time in our follow-ups when we get to this around the negotiation and welcoming objections, because you want to clear those out before you go to a close step or a commitment step in communication. And I'll ask them, how many of y'all have had a problem and you were explaining the problem and someone started solving it before you were done explaining it? And I'll say, well, tell me, how did that make you feel? What was going on inside of you? And I mean, some of the most negative descriptors come out. It's not just frustrated, it's, you know, livid, things like that. And then I'll ask, do you think your customers are any different than you? And it's an epiphany moment. They're like, wow, no, they're the same. So are we doing that to our own customers? Our answer might be right, but ask a few open-ended questions to confirm. Don't assume you have the answer. They're not ready to hear an answer, whether it's to an objection or whether it's to solving a problem for them. They're not ready to hear an answer until they believe you fully understand them. And this is true in every relationship of your life, even with your own children. No matter how young they are, everyone's number one underlying emotional need is the need to be understood. And when we meet that, people are willing to hear very difficult things. I mean, you talk about problems within COVID with logistics and all sorts of things. When we were teaching this to organizations, and I say, fully listen to them, take the hits. Once they finish and you fully understand them and they believe that you fully understand them, you will be surprised at what they'll accept as an answer. Cut them off, they'll go to someone else who will listen.
Yeah, because they want to feel valued and respected.
That's it. It all goes back to values and feeling valued. Everyone wants to be treated in a values-based manner.
The other thing I wanted to ask you a bit about is improving meeting structure, whether it's your meeting internally or your meeting with a customer, and how that impacts the ability to move discussions forward.
Yeah, it's interesting. Internal meetings are, when I ask people, where is their most time wasted? It's meetings and Zoom and Teams and all this. And now that we've gone virtual, people go from meeting to meeting to meeting to meeting and have very little time in between to process. So those meetings, it's now more than ever so important that those meetings are effective. So one, planning for that meeting, whether you are running the meeting or not, you need to have a plan for your engagement. And not just what you want to say, but what information you need to glean to fully understand this topic that we're talking about. Having a topic to begin with, the worst meetings, and people tell me this all the time. So we're just in here to brainstorm. People hate that. So having a meeting objective, letting people know what you're expecting from them. What is the goal of this meeting? What do you want to get out of this meeting? This might be the first of 10 meetings, but this is what we want to accomplish here. And this is what we're going to focus on. And tell people, bring your questions. Don't just bring answers, bring your questions. We really want to dig deep and fully understand this. So having a process and how you're going to engage, not what to say, but how to say it. So that, you know, what we do in our best day of communication, I mean, it's that asking great questions and listening and fully understanding the people in the room. So how can we do that more often, more consistently, and more effectively? Well, we do that by asking great questions and really focusing on a communication process to fully understand everyone in the room, what their perspectives are, whether we agree or not. That's not a part of it. The very most basic part of that meeting needs to be understanding the people in the room. And when people are understood, no matter what the solution is, there's more buy-in. even if it wasn't a solution that they were going to suggest, if they believe they were understood, most people are okay that their suggestion didn't get utilized. But if you don't understand what they were bringing in to the meeting and they don't feel understood, that blocks their buy-in into any solution that you come up with. And then all the side conversations happen after that meeting.
Well, and it relates to what we were just talking about a few minutes ago, which is helping people feel valued and respected. And in the context of meetings, it's being very clear, why are we here? And why is each individual in the room or on Zoom, whatever the case may be, are they clear why they are there personally? And in an age where so much of selling involves larger and larger buying committees and influencers and things like that, if you're a good salesperson that's doing the job of bringing those people together, you've got to still make it clear for each individual, you know, like, why is the CFO here? Why is this person there?
And if you're not asking them a question, then why are they here? And the passive answer is they're here for you to convince them.
And if those people are there because they are an overt or an influential part of the decision-making process, if you've disrespected them by not making it clear why they're there, what can happen offline? They can derail the whole thing.
Yeah, because most of the conversations happen after the meeting or in between meetings. Being able to make meetings shorter and get more done is key. So having a plan, having the questions, having a process, that you, how are you going to have this meeting? If people don't have that, man, those meetings go on forever. You know, one of the things I heard about Elon Musk, and I'm not 100% sure if this is true, but I heard that at Tesla, he has a rule that if you're in a meeting and you're not sure why you're there, get up and leave. Don't ask, just get up and leave. If you're needed, someone will say something. I need to ask you a question before you leave, but just get up and leave. There's better things for you to be doing than sitting here. Everyone has permission to do that. I thought that is genius.
Well, and again, it puts the onus on the person organizing the meeting to structure it in a way and make the communication of why we're here that much better, because then you have a lot less of that.
Absolutely. Or don't even show up in the first place if you don't know why you're going to be there. And I can't tell you the number of people that I talk to on a daily basis in my executive coaching or even in training. We talk about the number of meetings they have. And now I ask them, what percentage of these meetings are you 100% sure why you're there? And the answer is a very small percentage, sometimes like 10%, 20, maybe 30%. So if you think about it, 70% of the time, they don't know why they're there. And yet they're going to sit there for an hour. And if the majority of people, 70% of the time, don't know why they're in a meeting, and if you look at the number of meetings they're in a day, and let's just say it's 50%, look at all the money that's being wasted.
Well, we're out of our time for today. And I want to thank you so much again, Johnny, for joining us. This has been really insightful. And I think getting salespeople and sales leaders that listen to this show to think more intentionally about how they communicate and why is an important thing that can really make or break their success and ability to connect and build relationships. Thank you for listening, and I really hope you've enjoyed this episode of Mental Selling. Please make sure that you're subscribed, and as always, leave us a comment or a rating. Share it with your networks. You'll get more content like this on our website at integritysolutions.com. Until next time, I'm Will Milano with Integrity Solutions. Thanks very much again for being with us.